Rachel.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, how are you? You're right.
Well, thank you. It's good to see you. I feel once again we're doing our late night talk show.
It feels another late night talk show, doesn't it?
It does have that vibe, doesn't it? I think it's good though, because I think it lends a, you know, sort of warmth to the conversation.
I agree. It's kind of the sort of light in your room is very ambient.
Yeah.
So it's just very like, it's quite a nice like cozy vibe.
You have to understand I'm working in a room that, you know, sees me through the whole day and night, in fact.
Oh, bless you. Yeah,
it's like a bed set. Well, I do have other rooms in my house, but
like a bed.
Coming to you live from my bed set.
Oh my goodness, I love it. That's so
funny. Anyway, how are you? You're right.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. It's lockdown 2.0 now.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coping all right?
Yeah, just about. Mm-hmm. You just got to get on with it.
I know. That's true. But a bit of good news today. So vaccine tests seem to be going well. Seems to be quite positive.
I know. So. Well, we were talking about it just before we started this and I was like, I don't want to get my hopes up. So it's a weird one. I feel kind of like, oh, excited. Oh, could this be the end? Oh, but you don't want to overthink it. So
I know.
I know.
And I was saying, I heard somebody on the news at lunchtime who was quite a sort of sober scientist. And when he was asked about it, he said, you know, they said, you know, do you think this could be it? And he was like, yes. But oh my goodness, I suddenly feel quite hopeful.
I know. It's so nice, isn't it? So hopefully. Hopefully things soon.
I know. Get a bit of a glimmer.
Oh,
glimmer
of beautiful,
hope.
Beautiful.
Very good.
True. But anyway, should we talk about what's caught our eyes?
Yes, we're going to keep to time this week. We've decided.
Yeah. What's caught your eye this week?
Well, Fiona, this is quite exciting. I have been to the theatre.
What?
Well, hold on. I haven't actually been to the theatre. Okay. I've been to virtual reality theatre. But it was a theatre performance, and it was, yeah, so it was through the Tron Theatre here, but it was a touring show called Petrichor. Do you know what Petrichor is?
No.
I didn't either. It's like a quiz host. It's the smell of the earth after the rain.
Oh, I love that smell. One of my favourite smells.
Petrichor is the name of it.
Oh.
And yeah, so it was a live theatre. It was a virtual reality show. Now, that meant, I think if you'd seen it in real life, because it was set up to be done in real life, you would have had a VR headset. You could, I was too mean to get it, but you could get a cardboard VR headset that was sent out to you. In retrospect, I kind of wish I had, I know, but it just felt a bit naff. It felt like those 3D glasses you get in cinema. I kind of think in retrospect I maybe should have done that. So I watched it on my laptop and you just used your mouse to kind of look around and you were in the middle of a square space, in the middle of a like kind of black box theatre really, with stuff being projected onto four walls.
Wow.
And there were two performers in it. It was a physical theatre piece. It was by a company called Thick Skin, who are based in Manchester, who do physical theatre and sort of technology overlap type stuff. It was good. I think if I'd had the VR set on, it would have been better. So some of the visuals weren't that good, but it was just lovely to. It was lovely to watch something that was kind of a non-linear. Well, it was linear because there was a story to it, but it felt like going to a piece of dance or
a piece of
physical theatre. It was only half an hour long, but it was beautifully realised. The choreography was gorgeous, music, etc. It was all a bit dystopian. So I think. Story-wise for me, I was like, yeah, okay, the story's okay. But but what I loved was just, I'd forgotten how much I love watching people perform.
Yeah.
And I know it wasn't live because it was a pre-record, but it felt more alive than most of the things I'm watching on you know, conventional TV. So I was at the theatre.
Oh, that's so nice.
And that felt like a glimmer of hope as well, because it sort of made me think, well, A, there are people still making work, and that's really cool, and I wanted to support that. And also, I sort of thought, you know, it's a bit like, you know, they always say that during the war, you have invention sort of takes on a whole new thing. I think it's the same, isn't it? When we've got that, it's a necessity being the mother of invention, that it pushes people to the boundaries of their creativity. And I know it was a show that was obviously conceived prior to lockdown, but it because of the dystopian nature of it, it did speak a bit into the lockdown situation. So there was a lot about, you know, work, sleep, eat, work, sleep. And there's no more to it. And then, I don't want to give it away, but basically in the end, it moved into a much more 3D experience. And Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's where Petrichor comes into it. It was about connecting with nature, and it was about connecting with what's actually real and not just being a slave to what you do. So, you know, there were lots of themes that you thought, oh, this resonates quite a lot in some of the things we've thought about this year.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It's what's caught my eye, and it's taught me a new word because I hadn't come across
before. I've learned so much already.
Yeah, thick skin, Petrichor. I'm not sure. It is touring. I mean, I allegedly saw it at the Tron in Glasgow.
Surely you can see it anywhere.
Well, I don't know. So the way it worked was you bought a ticket. The ticket arrived in your inbox for the date that you had booked it.
Okay.
So I booked it for Friday night, but I could then watch it at any point up to Sunday night, which then made me think I should really have got the ticket the week before, because then you'd have had a whole week of access to it. So I might have watched it again, actually.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
I suspect theatres are trying to make, you know, they're trying to work it out as well. How to give it a sense of occasion. But
I love that.
Encourage your local theatres, people.
Yeah.
Support your artists.
Support your arts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What about you, Fee? What's caught your eye?
My thing that I've been engaging with this week is Eat Up by Ruby Tando.
Lovely.
And it's sort of the tagline is food, appetite, and eating what you want. And it's basically a bit of really, it's helping you just find the pleasure in eating.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruby Tando, she is a sort of writer and a sort of cook kind of.
She was on the Bake Off.
She was on the Bake Off originally.
Did she win it?
No, I don't think. I can't remember. No. She came third or something.
Yeah.
But she's awesome, and I really like it because she has chapters, but then she also has little recipes.
That's good.
And
so it's not a recipe book per se.
No, it's not a recipe book. It's about engaging with food in a way. She basically debunks a lot of things. So she debunks things like fad diets. She debunks clean eating. She talks about linking emotions and eating,
and
how
helpful,
emotional, how much they are linked. Talks about sharing food, cooking food. She has a whole chapter on bad taste. So the fact that we often think, oh, that's not very that's poor taste. So she talks a lot about McDonald's and things like that. But I love it. And there's a particular one, there's a particular thing she talks about. She says, our memories are patchworks of taste. So she talks about memory and taste being really intermingled. And she says, we might remember a particularly golden slice of lemon cake before we recall the birthday it celebrated. So sometimes we'll remember the food before we remember the event. Or we'll eat something and it'll totally take us back to where you're from. And she has this other thing which is awesome. It's called a cream egg ritual, where she it's kind of in her recipe bit, and it's basically just buy a cream egg, put it in your pocket, and just leave it in your pocket all day. And not because it melts, but because you then have the real excitement of build up
discovering,
of eating this,
knowing it's
discovering
there.
A cream egg. And she says, then when the moment is right, eat. And it's just amazing. So I really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed reading it. And it made me think a lot about food and the enjoyment of food. And she talks a lot as well about switching off. So when you're cooking a meal, switch off your phone, switch off all distraction, and enjoy the present moment of making that meal. And I tried it and I was this is amazing. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that for me, that's something that I have enjoyed in this last year
is
having more time to make food, because I'm at home for work. So, you know, I just stop working and I make something proper. But also the kind of inventiveness of I'm not quite sure what I've got in the house. So let's just, I'm not going to go out to the supermarket overly much because I don't want to, you know, do that more than I have to.
Yeah.
So you just, you're a bit inventive and a bit, that's fun.
Yeah, and she's not talking about elite food as well. She's not talking about make lots of fancy food. She's if you want to have a pack of chicken nuggets, eat the chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
If you can't afford lots of nice, clean eating type food, don't.
Yes.
That's not something to aim for.
Yeah.
She talks about, so I just really like all of that. But obviously she wrote it before COVID, so I think it would be kind of interesting to know what her perspective on some of this would be now,
Yeah.
You know, things like sharing food, like going to supermarkets become quite hard now. So
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it reminds me a bit of Toast. Have you read Toast by Nigel Slater?
No, I would.
It's very good. It's a memoir, but he kind of does it through food. And just when you were talking about, you know, different foods, that, I suppose the value system we put on food,
yeah,
what's good food and what's not good food. He talks about some really simple things that he just really loves. Was it custard? There's something like that. It's just a really very, that sounds good. So that's called?
It's called Eat Up. Eat Up. By Ruby
Tando. So today we're going to talk about work.
I know it sounds a bit weird to do a whole podcast about work.
I know. I haven't really got any starter questions, except that you were in work today, weren't you?
I was, which is quite unusual, isn't it? In the current, like. Uh-huh. Working maybe isn't necessarily an unusual thing, but to go into a place of work these days is a bit unusual, depending on what you do.
Yes, yes, because some people are working extremely hard, actually.
Yeah.
In their places of work.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is fun. I get to go in. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Great. Did it feel different?
No, I think, so since I started my new job, I started during pandemic, so I don't know any different. Mm-hmm. So it's quiet, and my commute hasn't been super busy, so I'm slightly struggling to like picture what it's like when it's not in the pandemic
context. Well, that's true. And it might be helpful to know what you do.
Oh right. I know, people are like, what's
he doing? Actually, Fiona, I'm an ice skater.
Can you imagine if I was like, I'm actually a figure skater now, and that's why I'm here.
What do you do?
Also, that's a funny thing, that's often the first thing we ask people, isn't it?
That's really interesting.
Second question, what do you do? And I hate asking people that.
Let's come back to that. I'm going to write that down.
Back to that.
So
currently my official title is community development worker. Sounds very like weird. Basically, I work in a community centre, and my job is to help people get jobs or find training, or to help them with casework. My job is largely with adults who have maybe stuff going on in their lives. So we tend to work with people who are maybe not having the like easiest time. So they're unemployed, mm-hmm. or they have like some stuff going on that needs a bit of help.
But that sounds like quite a difficult job to do from home.
Yeah. So it's quite hard. So I call my clients over the phone, but that's can be quite difficult because there's language barriers sometimes, or there's poor reception, or sometimes there's like crying children in the background, TV's on. You know, lots of distractions, but at the same time, it is nice because it means that you can call them and they don't have to spend like, you know, half an hour of their day just to come into the centre.
It's
a quicker process for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But don't get me wrong, I'd much prefer to work because they just feel like a disembodied voice.
Yes. Well, especially if you haven't ever met them.
Yeah.
Because I suppose at least if you'd met them in real life and then you were phoning, it's a lot easier, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
So
that's good. Yes. And do you find it draining? All that people contact?
Depends on the day. I think I can find it draining if I've worked with particularly like people for whom there's particularly challenging things going on. That can be quite draining. I don't find the conversations themselves very draining, but I think sometimes there's an emotional aspect that I think in this job anyway can be difficult. So you just have to like figure out like how to sort of leave work at work, and realize you're not responsible for like these people.
And do you have somebody that you can speak to? Like, do you have a supervisor that you do supervision?
So I have it's actually really cool. We have our line manager. But then we also have, there's a trained counsellor who's employed by the organisation, and you can meet with them once a fortnight. And that's like an hour long slot that basically you can talk about what's going on for you. So, which a lot of organizations don't have, which, so I feel really lucky that I have that, that I not only have a line manager that I can talk to, but I also have like someone who's outside of that space.
That's good. That's very interesting. And what other jobs have you done in your life?
Oh, well, do you know what? I want to ask you that because I think you've got more of an interesting mix than me.
I've got more. I don't know if I can remember. I was going to bring my CV, wasn't I?
I know.
Oh, yeah, you were going to help me work through my CV. All right, okay. Do you want me to try and run through it as fast
as you can? Just run through it as fast as you can.
Okay, so first job was in Boots the Chemist. Also, when I was a student, I worked in Margiotta's, which is an ice cream shop in Edinburgh, a newsagent. At various points, I wanted a job at doing tour buses at Waverley Market, Waverley Bridge. I hope they did it for one job, for one day rather, and then I got laryngitis, and it was a bit of a tragic time in my life. Then when I finished, so that was various sort of summer jobs and things, and then when I finished uni, I temped for a year. So I worked in Scottish Life and the Bank of Scotland on helplines for insurance things. It was ghastly. It's a whole thing. We can come back to that if you like. Then I did a gap year doing youth work. And from there, went into two different youth work jobs. So I worked for a trust, a youth work trust, and then I worked for Scripture Union. Then I went off to do drama school. Well, had a job with a theatre company in between. So that was doing a tour with a theatre company. And then, so an acting job. And then I did drama school. After drama school, I worked for Bigfoot, which was an educational schools thing. It was like, I saw the clock, educational schools thing in South London somewhere, Forest Hill. I worked in Gap, which was just as a whole other thing we talk about, retail, crew clothing, worked there. I then moved to Southampton and worked for Damaris, which was about producing online resources and video content and things. Oh, and I had a science boffin job after uni, after Mountain View. I forgot that. So that was basically being a children's entertainer, doing kids' parties all around the home counties for 50 quid a time. Then I came back to Edinburgh, set up Foolproof. So that's a charity and I work for it as an employee, but I suppose I started it. So it's a kind of self-employed type thing. I've also done lots of self-employed stuff in the last 10, 15 years. That's working as an actor, as a writer. Worked for the Bible Society as an employee and now I do freelance with them. I feel like there's a few I've missed out there. Oh, Cairn, worked for Cairn, so that was sort of missional discipleship stuff. And
I feel like, what have you not done? Is the real question.
Well, I think my work life splits into two camps. Mm-hmm. One camp is the jobs that I've done that I've had to do to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is the jobs that I feel are vocational. So that might be an interesting conversation about what's vocational and what's just pay the bills. So science buffins. I mean, science buffins was quite fun, to be honest. But it was very much about paying the bills. Gap was very much about paying the bills. Well, like you were able to pay your bills very well. And I have a big thing about retail, actually. I think people who work in retail are incredible because they have to know about the stock. They have to, you know, physically move stuff around. They have to deal with customers.
Yeah.
And they're all on really, really low. Well, I don't know if they're all on low wages, but a lot of the high street stores, it's quite low salary.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the whole thing. I feel as though, although I've done a lot of things, if you're to look at my vocational stuff, which would also include the BBC, radio work and so on as well, the vocational stuff all has a sort of thread of creativity, communication. And actually, even the youth work stuff would be about creative communication in a youth work context. So it's not totally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Oh, I did have a summer job as well in a solicitor's because my degree's in law. And at the end of first year, I had a job in a big Edinburgh solicitor's. I've had a lot of jobs, Fiona, where I've done the job for a bit and thought, yeah, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a residential property solicitor. I don't want to work in insurance services. I don't really want to work in Gap for the rest of my life. What else can I do?
Yeah. Process of elimination, though, isn't it?
I think as well, this is an interesting generational thing. So I think when I went to university in the late 80s, early 90s, it was changing, but there was still a kind of mindset of tertiary education, you would go to tertiary education and then you would get a job that pretty much would be your career. You'd be looking for a career. Now, I appreciate that's a very tertiary education driven way of thinking. But even if, you know, if you left school, so friends of mine who left school and went straight into work, mm-hmm. the anticipation would be that you stay in that job or you yeah. stay within the boundaries of that job for the rest of your life. But that, I think, has changed enormously. So I kind of feel I've had this slightly weird hybrid portfolio career, but I feel probably a bit more in tune with some of your generation as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
So I do have friends who have just, you know, so people who I studied with who have become solicitors, they might become advocates, they've become partners in the solicitors firm, they're still pretty much operating in the same yeah. sphere. Yeah. But that's, I think, quite unusual. Probably in professions like law and things it's not, but it's quite unusual for somebody to stay in the same field and the same job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although even as I say that, I'm thinking, well, what about teachers or medics? Yeah.
But then I know quite a lot of people,
you know.
Yeah, but then I feel like actually I know a lot of people in those areas who maybe like are my age and mm-hmm. aren't necessarily looking to be like in that profession for the rest of their lives. They're just mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm here for a bit. I don't know if I'll be here forever. I might be.
Yeah.
Or they're like, so quite a lot of people I know who are particular in like sort of medical world terms or world will take mm-hmm. years out now and will like yeah. do gap years because actually they're like, I don't want to just be trapped in this like space forever.
And that would have been very unusual, I yeah. think, for my generation mm-hmm. to do that.
Yeah. So I certainly think now that even the vocational jobs where you like go to uni, you study a certain thing and then you graduate and it's just assumed, oh, you'll do that forever. I just don't think that's like a narrative that a huge amount of people like want to like hold themselves to. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Do you think that's economic? Why do you think that is? Is it because we've lost, there's a whole lot of things that we've lost security in?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of economic. I also just think that like globalization and mm-hmm. I think the sense of, oh, well, I could be missing out if I don't, there's a bit of FOMO yes. in there of like, I'm going to miss out if I don't do something different for a bit.
Yeah, that's true. And the breadth of possibility.
Yeah.
So I mean, I can remember kind of careers guidance at school was pretty non-existent, but there was, you know, there was a limited number of jobs that they were suggesting you could do. Whereas if you think now about all the different jobs you could do, mm-hmm. yeah. we're a bit overwhelmed by choice, actually.
Yeah. I'm like, but now, I mean, I do find it a bit overwhelming, to be honest. But saying yeah. that, similar to me, to you, though, I like definitely going to uni, there wasn't much careers guidance yeah. that I was given that was, you know. And then I went to uni and then left uni, and it was only upon leaving that I realised mm-hmm. there was this whole world of like yes. possibility of potential careers and things you can do. I don't mm-hmm. know. It's a bit of a weird one because
I know,
like, yeah, I just think actually there's a job for everything.
Yes,
and you just don't yes. realise it.
Yes, and it's very specialised, isn't it? Yeah. You know, work is yeah. very specialised. And sometimes I look at people and I think, how do you know how to do that?
I know.
How do you know? Did you know at 15 that's what you wanted to do? You know, just be for something very, very specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But then I suspect that's what happens as well, isn't it? Somebody goes down a track and then yeah. they get more and more detailed in what yeah. they yeah. end up doing.
Yeah.
So what about this idea of being defined by what you do? Because yeah. it is often the first question. And personally, as somebody who has a portfolio career, I find it really hard to answer that question.
I know. I'm always like, I find I just don't like that premise because mm-hmm. It's very exclusive. So,
yeah.
For instance, if you're unemployed, immediately yep. it's like, how do you answer that question?
Yeah.
Or if you've chosen, for instance, if you're like, I don't know, a carer or something yep. where, or you, I just think, again, how do you answer that question? Or yep. if you're in a job that you really hate.
Yes.
And you don't want to yes. talk about it. And I know a lot of people yes. who finish work and they don't want to talk about work. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think actually I don't like that that's the way that we define people now. So mm-hmm. I try quite hard not to ask people that. Mm-hmm. You stumble into these places, don't you? And it's hard sometimes to get away from it. But I think also because of what you've just said as well, in terms of having an eclectic mix of things, sometimes it's quite hard to summarize what I do.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm sometimes, and also sometimes I end up being almost a bit ashamed. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I'm like a community development worker. Like,
And where does that come from then?
I don't know. I think sometimes it's because it's not an easy boxed thing, isn't it? I don't know. I'm sure you found that as well. Of people can't box you
yeah.
in.
Yeah, very much so. But I also think, because I was thinking, I find it quite hard to say I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Because I think, and I think this is probably true for quite a lot of professions where, you know, sometimes you're working, sometimes you're not. And I am an actor, but I'm not Cate Blanchett. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not working full time as an actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, where the kind of creative thing comes in. It's easy to say I'm a creative consultant or whatever, but to basically make up your own title. But you know, so sometimes it can be a wee bit hard to, or you get the inevitable question. So the actor one, of course, is the classic: is and what would I've seen you in? Well, nothing, because
exactly,
do bits of community theatre or whatever it is.
I think my question for now that I would ask people: so if I'm meeting them in a certain context, I would always say, "Oh, so like when you're not here, what do you do with your time?"
Yeah, that's good.
So then it's less of like, what do you do? It's like, okay, like outside of this context that I met you, like what do you get up to? And that might be something that's work related, or it might be something else. And I suppose to a certain extent, it still is a bit of a defining question, isn't it? Of like, you define yourself by what you do. And I don't agree with that as well. I think that like we shouldn't define ourselves by what we do. We should define ourselves by who we are.
And it reminds me of, do you remember the time we had the conversation about value? Because we talked a bit about this with values, that is, I think sometimes people want to define themselves by what they do because of how they value who they are.
So I think it's a bit of a challenge though, isn't it? And I think now I'm working in a context where I'm working with people who don't have jobs.
Yeah,
it's super interesting to start thinking about this from a different perspective.
Absolutely. I know. And yes, because I like the fact that you started off by talking about how it excludes people, because that would be my experience of meeting people who, for whatever reason, are not in the paid workplace.
And
in fact, even I sometimes think, you know, I come across a lot of people who, you know, if you're working in the gig economy, or you're working in retail, or you're working in bar work, it's somehow sort of looked down on and not as important. And actually, and again, we did talk about this with Faye, because we talked about the role of people like refuse collectors and care workers and so on, who are doing what society would often see as lesser jobs. But they're really hard work, and they keep society going, don't they? So interesting.
Yeah, we've just got a very skewed view, don't we, of work?
I know. We have. I would quite like to talk about whether we need to work, but we can maybe talk about that the next conversation we have, because that's going to be about
leisure.
So I'll flip it. So that stuff that we've not got to this time we talk about leisure. I've got a little quote for you. You know how I enjoy.
Oh, you love a quote.
Everybody thinks I'm well read, but really I just Google quotes about and then I see what comes up. But here's a little Abraham Lincoln quote that it just made me chuckle, because I was thinking about my eclectic jobs. So Abraham Lincoln said, "My father taught me to work, but not to love it. I never did like to work, and I don't deny it. I'd rather read, tell stories, crack jokes, talk, laugh, anything but work." I was like, that is my work. All of those things.
All of those things.
Would be my job.
That is so good.
Read, tell stories, crack jokes, talk and laugh. That's what I do.
I love that.
Maybe that's what I should have on a business card. Anyway. Well, that has been, honestly, that time has flown by. That's been so interesting.
I know.
So, so interesting. Oh my goodness. We could do a follow-up at some other point.
I know. Good.
Here's one last question to finish with. If you could do any job in the world, no bounds, what would you choose to do?
I'd like to be a scuba diver.
I like that.
Who takes photos or videos of coral reefs?
Not the kind who fish dead bodies out of the Clyde.
No, I'm happy to leave that to someone else. What about you?
I think I would. Oh, no, I asked the question and I don't know what I would say. I think I would like to do something. Do you know, I think I'd like to be a musician.
Nice.
Yeah. I think musically I'm not good enough to, or maybe a singer. I would like to be a singer.
Mm.
That's good. I can sing, but I'm never going to be, you know, at the level.
Mm.
Something like that. Something that was that's really highly skilled that I don't have the skill for. Fiona, we're going to move on to Signs of Hope,
yes.
Which is, of course, our new segment.
I know.
And you're up this week. What's your sign of hope?
Oh, my sign of hope. So my sign of hope this week relates to the US election. Woohoo. Not actually related to the result, but more the...
Diplomatic.
I know. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to be apolitical. No, I think... What I was really hopeful about was the amount of people that voted and the voter turnout. And that, because of COVID, I think more people than ever voted, not necessarily because of the pandemic itself, but because of the widening of conditions so people could mail in their vote. So they didn't have to go to the polling station. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just found some stats that I think 66.9% of like the people who could vote did, which is massive, and that's the highest turnout since 1900.
Wow.
I know. And I was like, this is amazing. And so I think 160 million people exercised their right to vote, and that just gives me a lot of hope, because I think whenever there's an election, a free election where people are allowed are given that space to have their say, I feel really hopeful. Not necessarily because of the ultimate decision that's made, but because we live in a place where we can do that. And I think it made me just feel really excited that so many people, in spite of the chaos of 2020 and the uncertainty, felt able to vote and weren't like, you know, throwing this opportunity away. So I felt really excited about that. And I don't have the stats, but I think a really high number of African Americans voted, which is incredible. And then another thing that I was just really excited about was that we have a female vice president who is also biracial. I just think all of these things are really cool. So I think that's what's giving me hope and makes me feel excited is, seeing the amount of people that became passionate about the world and society they live in and doing something about it. So...
Brilliant.
That's so exciting.
That's brilliant. That's great. It feels like democracy is the winner.
It really is.
I mean, I mean, it sounds a bit glib to say it, but I do think there's something, there's a swing back from populism to democracy.
I hope so.
Just belief in decency. I was getting political there. Sorry,
that was political, what you like.
Sorry about that. Okay, so thank you very much. Hopefully that's a hopeful hope for hopefully lots of other people. So we've done it. We're at 33. We did it, Fiona. We did it.
We did it, Joe.
It's my quote of the week. We did it, Joe. It's so beautifully said.
She's so like,
anyway. Yeah. Oh, we did it, Joe. Do you have any wisdom for the week?
Yes, I do. Imagine if I said, nothing. I think wisdom for the week this week is, in spite of restrictions, just like be friendly. So the reason I'm saying that is that I got a free cinnamon roll out of it. In that I went in to get a takeaway coffee today and just like chatted a bit to the waitress. And she was like, oh, do you want a croissant on the house? And I was like, really? I was like, great. And I think it's because I was just a bit friendly. And so that's not to say you should be friendly just to get things out of people, but it really made my day.
That's good. Oh, that's a lovely thing.
Yeah.
A small thing.
Yeah. So I think it's the whole wearing a mask thing makes people sometimes feel a bit like they can't be friendly to one another. And I think actually, just be kind.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah.
Very good.
Me? Have you got anything?
Mine is just about getting out and walking. So I got a Fitbit for my birthday. And so I'm getting moderately obsessed about the number of steps I'm taking in the day. So there was one day last week when I took 16,000 steps because I went out for two walks and did a full day's work on one of my many jobs. But yeah, so I think get out and walk. I don't know if I said this last week. Can't remember. But I've basically made the decision, and I'm in a fortunate position to be able to do this. But I've made the decision that if the sun is shining and I haven't been out, I'm going to get out, and mm-hmm. I can always, you know, work around and mm-hmm. work later into the evening, whatever. Now, I appreciate I do a job where I can do that, but try and get out, try and get some sunshine. I'm taking a myriad of pictures of the sunset and spamming everybody on Instagram with it. But do you know what? I just loving it.
I mean, we're loving it as well. I love that content.
Just keep it coming.
Just keep it coming.
I'm hopeful about all of that as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's my wisdom. Get out, take some steps, take some photographs, feel the
breeze
in your lungs, feel the breeze in your hair, and you'll feel a lot better. Set you up for the day, and you get to chat to people on the way. So I'm having nice conversations with the lollipop man at the end of my road.
Oh, lovely.
It's very
delightful.
Good. Well, that has been fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
I know. So next week we're on the flip side of work, which is
leisure.
We could talk about what you wear in your leisure. Oh, your leisure wear. There's another job. I had a job selling. I was in a shop called Wilkie's selling cruise wear to ladies going on cruises. Yeah.
I actually can't deal with this.
I think I need to write them all down.
You need to produce a memoir of all these like stories.
I mean, I've probably got funny stories from each and every one. In Wilkie's, you were under instruction that if things didn't fit, you could say to people, there is a corsetry department on the second floor. No one needs to know. Edinburgh ladies going on cruises. Right. Well, that has been lovely.
It's been fun.
And until next week.
This has been hollow.
And substantial. Thank you so much for listening.